Welcome to Massive Late Fee. And now your hosts, Mark and Carol.
Well, hello everybody. My name is fucking welcome back.
Your name is fucking?
I'm in a good headspace.
See, that's what I mean.
Welcome back to Massive Late Fee. My name is Mark. With me, as always, is my wife, good headspace Carol. How you doing today, Carol?
Hey, what's up?
Not much. It's been a good week here. It is March 12th, 1999. There's got to be a joke there about astronauts, oral sex in space, good headspace, something like that.
Sure.
It's got to be, right?
Sure.
All the pieces are there. Somebody put it together. Latefee1994@AOL.com. Give us the joke.
I think it's our job to give them the jokes, but sure, we can give it a shot.
No. We've bled for these people for the last 5 years, Carol. Mm. 5+ years. They can do something for us.
Sure.
My throat hurts and I'm doing this. You've got me with sore throatness. And I know, good headspace, all that stuff, but... Mm-hmm.
I just suggested we take a minute, but...
There's no minutes needed.
It's all good.
Oh, it's okay. Mark, Carol, I picked up a copy of Variety.
Okay.
Variety magazine /newspaper/trade. It's a trade paper.
Okay.
That's what they call it. It's one of the trades.
What the hell does that mean?
It's the newspaper of the industry. The film industry.
Okay.
So they call it the trades, you know.
Sure.
It's all the news that's fit to print of the entertainment. It's perfect for us.
What do they got in there?
Martin Scorsese. Are you familiar with him?
No, never heard of him.
I believe it's pronounced Martin Scorsese.
Sure.
And Nick Paligi have signed on to write the script for a feature on the rags to riches to death by strychnine poisoning story of Italian financier Michel Sindona for Disney.
Oh, that sounds like a great Disney film. No shit. Nice classic.
And producers Harry and Mary Jane Ufland. Scorsese will produce the film with the Uflands and possibly direct as well. The Uflands of Disney have also set director Gregory Hoblit from Primal Fear fame, and writer Robert Nathan to spearhead a film based on the murder case tried by famous Wyoming trial lawyer Gary Spence.
Interesting.
What do you think about that?
Maybe something we should watch.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. So apparently they worked on Goodfellas and Casino together, Scorsese and these Uflands. So this dude was a Sicilian truck driver who used his accounting savvy to become a leading Italian financier.
So wait a minute. He was a truck driver who became a financier?
Yes.
That's quite the career trajectory.
Yeah, well, he used his savvy and invested in the Vatican or something. He was a Vatican investment counselor.
Okay.
He advised the Vatican on how to invest their money, starting as a truck driver.
Yeah, I'm like, why would they trust a truck driver? This makes no sense.
When he attempted to broaden his holdings in America, he was promptly picked clean by Wall Street sharks, leading to a downward spiral that ended when Sedona was found poisoned in his jail cell in Italy, apparently by strychnine. The journalist turned scribe and Scorsese, who are also working on a Dean Martin biopic called Dino at Warner Brothers.
Oh, I bet you'll want to see that.
I will. When that comes out. According to Paligi, one of the writers, Sindona was a modern-day Icarus who used his knowledge of accounting to create wings of wax, but toppled when he rose too high and those wings melted. Honestly, it sounds like a really interesting movie and an interesting story.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it.
It sounds good.
Yeah. Dynamite drop in here. What about this? I think you'll find this a little more interesting. Maybe you'll have more to sink your teeth into. Maybe we should just stick with the free press. internet powerhouse Yahoo has struck a deal to acquire netcasterbroadcast.com for a reported $5.7 billion
dear Lord.
In stock, positioning the web portal as the leading distributor of audio and video, including movies, on the internet.
Who watches movies on the internet, though, really?
It's a big thing, apparently. That's a big new movement. The move into entertainment.
That sounds dumb.
Okay. I agree. But can I get through the story first, and we can give our comments?
I don't know if you can.
The move into entertainment by a major internet player has significant ramifications as net broadcasting becomes more popular with consumers. Independent producers will have entirely new sources for film financing and distribution. So wait a second. They're talking about financing and distributing a film completely on the internet, bypassing the movie theaters.
Again, it sounds dumb. Why would you not want to go to the movie theater to see a movie? Like, that's the best part of watching the movie.
Yeah.
Popcorn.
What kind of audience are you going to get if you're just distributing it on the internet?
Right? Like, a lot of people are still using fucking AOL discs to get online, and we're going to be, like, watching movies now? Come on, people.
Wow. Yeah, insane. But that's, so that's their big deal. They're, I guess, Yahoo wants to try to start showing movies on the internet.
I mean, Yahoo does a lot of things on the internet. They play games and stuff. Like, that's
the company
fine.
Plays games?
No, I'm saying, like,
with people's lives.
You know,
it
like,
sure
when
does.
You go to Yahoo, like, you can do email or play games. Or, like,
I know what you mean.
Just saying, like, they do have extra things on their site, but I don't know about movies. That seems like a bit much.
Although distribution of films to the internet may be years down the line, Yahoo can expect immediate benefits from the broadcast.com purchase. It has been trying to broaden its mostly text-based service through acquisitions such as broadcast.com, which delivers audio and video programming ranging from presidential speeches and live sports events to Victoria's Secret's lingerie fashion shows on the internet.
Well, you know every 16-year-old boy will be watching those.
So, yeah, our audio's on the internet. We don't use broadcast.com, but...
No.
Broadcast.com offers access to more than 425 radio and TV stations and cable nets through its website.
Maybe we should use broadcast.com.
No shit. In a move that adds films to its list of programming, broadcast.com inked a deal with Trimark Holdings in February to begin screening at least 50 picks from Trimark's library, including its Warlock and Leprechaun series.
Oh, wow.
For free or pay-per-view.
Okay. Well, we have pay-per-view already.
Yeah, like, pay-per-view on cable, sure.
Yeah.
But they want to have pay-per-view on the internet.
So, like, okay, I don't really want to sit at my computer for 2 hours straight. Like, that's not comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. That's
and,
true.
And it's not like, you know, when you're sitting on the couch in the living room, you can watch with other people. Like, you're just going to be watching, like, maybe one other person, but probably not. Like, it's all by yourself.
Yeah.
Who's going to sit in their room, like, for hours on end just in front of the computer? Come on, no.
I agree. It's, I don't know. It's weird. They would have to, so technology would have to grow, I think, for this to be even a thing. If there was a way you could, if you can watch movies for free, like whenever you wanted to, like if I could just go and, if I felt like killing myself and wanted to watch Leprechaun for some reason, I could, and I could somehow connect my computer screen to my TV screen and show it through there. Like, have the TV screen be monitor for my computer, then maybe I could see something like that.
Yeah.
But technology's not there for that. I mean, because that would be cool, like, anytime you want. Like, instead of having to, like, go down to Blockbuster and stuff like that and rent the tape and everything and put it, or the DVD and put it in the DVD
player. Get with
the
time, sir.
Sorry. So, I'm sorry. We just got a DVD player, everyone. Writer-director Cameron Crowe. You may be familiar with him. He wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Of course.
Nearly has completed casting his untitled DreamWorks comedy, and leading his ensemble cast will be... It's a comedy. It says Crowe's movie leads are ready to rock and roll. It's about some kind of rock and roll thing. But anyway, his leads of the ensemble will be Kate Hudson, who I was like, I saw her picture and I was like, she looks somewhat familiar to me. She was in, she's in that 200 Cigarettes movie that we keep talking about seeing but haven't seen. And she's Goldie Hawn's daughter.
Okay.
In the role of a female groupie and Billy Crudup as the leader of a rock band. Frances McDormand has the offer and is negotiating to play the mother of a young journalist who comes of age and by going on the road with the band.
That sounds like a terrible idea. Great idea for a movie, but a terrible idea for life.
Yeah, no kidding. Jason Lee of Mallrats, Bijou Phillips, one of my relations, Anna Paquin, Noah Taylor, and Faruza Balk fill out the rest
of from the Craft.
Yeah, they fill out the rest of the primary roles. With the final casting deals quickly coming together, Crowe is nearly ready to begin production on his first film since Jerry Maguire. Containing the most sought-after roles among young actors, Crowe would not comment on story development or the exact subject of his movie, but sources say it's a very personal comedy about the world of 70s rock, as seen through the eyes of a journalist observing a group of all the people who revolve around it. Crowe has taken his time auditioning young thesps.
That's wow.
Yeah, instead of thespians, who flocked to the star-making potential of the parts. The female lead role went to Hudson, Goldie Hawn, 200 Cigarettes, they mention it. And let's see, Crudup landed the role that has been targeted by a swarm of actors in his age group after Brad Pitt withdrew from the movie. Oh, interesting. So Brad Pitt was going to be in the movie.
Hmm.
Crudup played Steve Prefontaine in Without Limits and will co-star with Holly Hunter in Jesus' Son. And then Frances McDormand, of course, was in Fargo.
Oh, okay, I knew I recognized the name.
But yeah, interesting idea for a movie. We both liked Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
I like a lot of Cameron Crowe's work, so maybe we'll check out that movie, Untitled, as of yet. But
it's hard to know, then. They should not talk about it until they name it.
Well, they haven't. They're just finishing casting it. They haven't even filmed it yet.
I would name it before I start writing it. What the fuck?
Sigourney Weaver is near a deal to star with Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest, a sci-fi comedy for DreamWorks that will be directed by Dean Parasol and produced by Mark Johnson.
That sounds awful.
Weaver is something of a sci-fi staple, of course, what with her ultra-serious signature role as futuristic butt-kicker Ripley in Alien and its three sequels. In Galaxy, Weaver would join Allen as part of a crew of cult-favorite sci-fi TV series who are recruited by a group of aliens to save their imperiled race.
Okay, so we're going to take, like, serious actress from the Alien series, Sigourney Weaver.
She was in Ghostbusters, too. She's done comedy.
And put her with fucking the Tim the Tool Man Taylor in outer space. okay.
What a spot on... What a spot on Tim Taylor impersonation. Ooh, okay. I love how he when he wraps up each episode by going, well, that's it for this week, folks. Ooh, okay.
Shut up.
Alan Rickman, talk about serious. Alan Rickman is also in talks to star in the film, which was scripted by Robert Gordon from a story by David Howard. That's insane. Alan Rickman's going to be in this. Is it supposed to be a comedy?
It doesn't sound good.
Alan Rickman was, in case, for those of you that don't know, Alan Rickman was Hans Gruber in Die a Little Harder or whatever it was called.
I don't know that one.
You don't know the movie Die Hard?
Oh, Die a Little Harder. I thought that was a different movie. No, like, no. That I never heard of.
Die Hard.
Okay.
1988's or 87's Die. I think it was 87's Die Hard.
You know what, though? I don't think I've ever seen it.
He was the bad guy. Mr. Cowboy. What?
I saw that one. Like
what?
I saw the sequel with you. We did the sequel, but I don't think
yes,
I saw the original.
We did Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Like, I know people talk about how it's like a Christmas movie and stuff, but I've never seen it.
Oh, my God.
It just didn't sound great.
It's a great movie. It's a great action movie.
Okay. You say so.
It was a great action. You know what was great about it?
What?
Is that my buddy Ben doesn't really like it that much either. But that's something we disagree on. But what was great about it is, like, it came out of an era where Schwarzenegger and Stallone were the action heroes. These giant muscle, like, just huge guys, completely unrealistic body images and stuff, unless you take steroids and everything, and they're, like, essentially indestructible. And then, you know, they were the action stars of the era. And then you've got this dude, Bruce Willis, like, just small, normal-looking Bruce Willis, balding guy and everything, walking on broken glass with bare feet and everything, getting his feet all cut up. And it's like, this guy's vulnerable. This guy can get hurt, you know, like, that's... It was a completely different take on the action film genre.
Yeah, well, I mean, that does sound kind of interesting, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's not a Christmas movie, but it's a good movie. It's a movie that takes place at Christmas time, but it has nothing to do with Christmas.
Yeah.
In any way.
Anything that has any snow is a Christmas movie, apparently.
Oh, okay.
That's what I hear.
Tell that to Shane Black. Anyway.
Who's that?
A director and writer. He wrote The Predator, or Predator, whatever it was called.
Did it take place during Christmas?
No.
Was there snow?
It took place in a jungle, no.
Okay, well, what the fuck are you
talking
about?
He makes other movies that take place at Christmas.
Okay.
He's a big Christmas guy.
Gotcha.
Anyway, speaking of Christmas.
Anyway.
We saw, hey, analyze this, analyze this.
It had no Christmas either, just FYI.
It was a wedding.
Yeah.
At a wedding theme.
With Robert De Niro and Billy Crystal.
Bobby De Niro. And William Crystal.
I'm really curious what you thought about this movie.
I'm really curious what you thought about this movie, Carol, because we haven't really talked about it.
It was fine.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't awful. It was...
It's not the worst movie I've ever
seen. A medium movie.
I know.
Worthy of, you know, eating popcorn at, but not necessarily worthy of, like, owning or ever seeing again.
The worst review you can give a movie, it's not like, you know, or the least interesting, I guess, anyway. It's medium.
Sorry.
No, I'm not. It's not your fault. It's the movie's fault. So I pretty much agree with you, I think.
Okay.
On this. You laughed a lot more than I did. I think I liked this less than you did.
I got that impression.
This is like, so first of all, we already have this. It's called The Sopranos. Yeah. And I think it's funnier than this movie in a lot of ways.
Oh, wow. The Sopranos is not a comedy.
I can't accuse either one of stealing from the other because they obviously were both in production at the same time.
Right.
It's one of those parallel thinking things.
Great minds think alike.
Billy Crystal is funny. I like Billy Crystal. Robert De Niro is a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I like Robert De Niro.
But he wasn't good in this movie.
He was good at parts of this movie.
I don't know. There were a lot of times he was, like, fake. Like, he was, like, doing, like, fake crying and stuff. And
that's
one of the worst.
He's supposed
to be real crying. So I don't understand why he's fake crying. Does he not know how to cry? Like, you're supposed to be a good actor, sir. What's happening?
So, throughout the most of the movie, we're just going to jump right there, I guess. So for those of you that don't know, it's... basically this guy, Robert De Niro's character, is a mobster, a well-known mobster, in New York, and he starts having panic attacks and he needs to see a psychiatrist. They're having a big meeting of all the families all around the country, I guess, are all coming together because they want to decide who's going to lead things or something, or they vaguely talk at the beginning about before it was about who's going to fucking lead the family, and now it's about survival. How are we gonna live in this new age when there's leprechaun on the internet and everything? Like, you know, I don't know exactly what's changing in the organized crime world, but I guess it's getting harder. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they talk vaguely about that, but that's the big set piece at the end of the movie is that they're all going to this meeting, and he's having panic
attacks. It's gangster palooza.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so that's the setup.
Well, he's having panic attacks because he got shot at and saw his best friend get killed.
Yeah, his best friend got killed and he was almost killed.
Yeah.
Because Chaz Palminteri wants to kill him. Because
I'm impressed that you remember their name.
Because he wants to be the new mobster or whatever. I know Chaz Palminteri.
See, like, I'm so glad we don't live in New York because I already have trouble paying attention to who people are and their names and shit. Mm-hmm. And this would be like a whole other like genre of celebrity that you'd have to know, like being aware of all the gangsters that are around.
I'm sure people in New York are thinking about that constantly.
I just wouldn't want to have to worry about running into a gangster and not realizing it.
Think about going to Italy.
Okay, in Italy, I'm going to eat gelato and like check out like the Vatican and some pizza.
And just assume they're all gangsters.
I'm going to assume that I have nothing to do with any of it and eat my gelato.
But you couldn't do that in New York, though.
No.
Okay, I gotcha.
Because I wouldn't be a tourist.
Because trouble finds you
in
New
York. If we lived there.
No, that's a line from Swingers.
Yeah.
When he's like, yeah, I've got a gun. This isn't like New York. He's like, yeah, fucking right, it ain't like New York. Here you can avoid trouble. In New York, trouble finds you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the crying thing. It occurs to me I haven't really seen Robert De Niro cry that much. Mostly he just makes that grumpy face. What I don't understand, like, it looks like his mouth is turned upside down.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's a really weird face. He does that a lot, but like that face, like all scrunched up and stuff.
I wish you guys could see what he just did with his face because it was pretty fucking hilarious.
I think that
the same face you make when you're doing an impersonation of your dad. By the way,
my dad looks like Robert. I think that he thinks that this fake crying is funny. That's what I think. I don't think he's not a bad actor, obviously. He's a very good actor. And I don't think he knows how to be in a comedy.
Yeah.
That's I think, the big problem is that they cast him and they said, okay, you're a gangster, so you know how to play gangsters. But this is a comedy, so you have to kind of be a funny gangster. And, like, it's weird because it's almost like he's going through male menopause or something like that.
Yeah.
Because he's having panic attacks and stuff like that, but also, like, all these emotions are coming up and he's crying a bunch and stuff like that. And he, like, watches this commercial and he's like, and he's, like, crying and everything and doing that face and not really crying, obviously.
Right.
But I think he thinks that's funny. And what he doesn't understand about comedy is that you can't be in on the joke. Like, if you're doing the funniest thing, like, it's not funny for the audience. Maybe in certain, like, stand-up comedy or, like, in certain art forms, you can be in on the joke and everything. Mm-hmm. If you're in a movie, if you're in on the joke and you're thinking it's funny and you're showing that through your performance and, you know, all that stuff, it the audience can't laugh. You're taking their laughter away from them.
Yeah.
You can't be in on the joke. And he's trying to be in on the joke while he's doing it. Like, look how ridiculous I'm being. And it's like, that doesn't work. If what would be funny is if he was like being intimidating and stuff like that. Like being his, like, almost like a Goodfellas or something like that, where he's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you, you know, and everything like that. And then he sees this commercial and he breaks down into believable, real tears.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition of those two things is what's funny.
Right.
Then we can laugh at it. But when he's hamming it up like that, it's like, it's not funny.
No, it's ridiculous.
So I just don't think he knows. I think he's deliberately making this choice.
Well, it's a very bad one.
To cry ridiculously because he thinks that's what you do in a comedy. I just don't think he knows how to be in a comedy.
Yeah. That's probably my biggest beef with the movie, though, his fake crying. Like, the rest of the movie I enjoy. I think the premise is funny.
I mean, the premise is interesting. I don't know if I guess that's maybe the other problem I have with it is I don't think the premise is necessarily funny. Like, I think a lot of comedies have to come from a premise that just the premise itself, with no jokes, just the situation, is funny. If the situation is funny, then, you know, the jokes will come. You write the jokes and you know, but you have to start with a funny situation. I don't necessarily think that a gangster going to a therapist is a funny situation.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have. I mean, it could be.
No, there are. You can make it funny.
Yeah.
But I don't think the situation itself is funny, and I think that kind of hampers them a little bit, too.
What I think is funny, though, is the way that this therapist is being forced into providing the therapy, and then this guy is so intrusive into his life, and that creates a lot of, like, the comedy.
The intrusiveness into his life is where a lot of the comedy comes from. Huh. Like, the insisting on all this stuff and everything. But there's, I don't know, there's a lot of game-breaking elements in this movie. First of all, he's, you know, he's talking to him and everything, and then, like, his fiance, who's Phoebe from Friends.
Yeah, that was cool.
She's like, wow, where were you? You were gone from the hotel room we were staying in. I thought you were like, you didn't want to marry me or whatever. You wanted to go with Rachel or something. And he's like, no, I've got this new client that came from New York to see me. And she's like, who? And he's like, let me tell you their name.
Yeah, which no therapist would do that.
And then he gets, like, captured by the FBI or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're in his house. Not captured, but, like, they talk to him. And they're like, yeah, he's your client, right? Tell us that. And he's like, yeah, he's my client.
No therapist would say that.
Tell us everything about what he said in therapy. And he's just like, I mean, he doesn't, like, tell them everything, but, like, he's very open with all the stuff mm-hmm. and everything. And it's like, he doesn't, they can't even ask him that.
No.
Like, I mean, they can try or whatever, but he's not allowed to disclose any of this information.
No, a mental health professional should not be disclosing any information without a subpoena. And even then, sometimes I've heard of therapists going to jail instead of releasing their clients' records.
And
because it's an integrity thing.
Yeah. And it's the whole thing is ridiculous to me. So, like, I don't understand why any of this is happening. And it breaks a lot of the reality. Like,
yeah.
This guy's supposed to be some sort of professional therapist. The other thing is we don't get enough of Billy Crystal's, like, I don't know where he's coming from. He has this vague, rivalry with his father.
Mm-hmm.
His father's doing a book tour and everything. He's, like, a famous psychiatrist, and Billy Crystal's not a famous enough psychiatrist, I guess. But we don't, like, I don't know, we don't delve into that much at all.
True.
There's a lot of backstory we don't get here.
Yeah, I agree. There's not a ton of, like, I don't know. There was just some superficially funny things, and I felt like laughing. Like, well, I'm telling you, it wasn't a great movie.
I think that's the big problem, is that it's all surface.
Yeah.
And it except for the very brief periods of time, it wants to be something. It wants to be about something. It wants to be about fathers and sons.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't go nearly far enough into any of that. Like, if you want to create a comedy, an irreverent comedy, with a moralistic and a, like, a core of, you know, just gooiness of, like, father and son relationships and things like that, because it tries to be about that. Robert De Niro has a son who we only see in, like, one or two scenes, who only has, like, one scene of lines.
Robert De Niro does?
Yes. You blinked and you missed him.
Oh, wow.
That's okay. How fast he's on the screen. And they mention at one point, you don't want your son to grow up like you without his father, because you're going to get killed or whatever. That's part of it, because your dad got killed.
Mm.
So, like, there's that. Billy Crystal has his own son.
Yeah.
Who is a little more featured in the movie, but again, doesn't have much to do. We don't know their relationship that well.
And even, like, at one point, they're hanging out watching, like, Shamu or whatever.
Mm.
And the soon-to-be stepmom and son are sitting there, and Billy Crystal's like, oh, you guys having fun? And the son's like, I'm pretending to have fun because we're supposed to be bonding right now, with this, like, fake look on his face. And it's like, I don't know, it's like he's describing what's supposed to be happening in the scene instead of acting. Like, I think he was being sarcastic, but it didn't work that way.
No, it really did. That's, I thought that, too. I, like, it's weird because I had that exact same thought of, like, oh, this kid's just talking about acting.
Yeah, like, show us that. Don't tell us that.
That's what it felt like. I guess that's probably why, because it was telling, not showing. But, yeah, like, I didn't get enough from him. Like, if the movie wants to be about fathers and sons, then I need more of their relationship.
Sure.
I need more of Robert De Niro and his son's relationship. And then they can talk about their relationships with their own fathers. And that's like, so here's another Billy Crystal movie where I think it works. City Slickers.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Not the sequel, which is not nearly as good that we saw, the very silly Legend of Curly's Gold, but the original City Slickers, which is an irreverent comedy, but it has a core of family and what's important in life and everything else. I mean, it's a comedy where Bruno Kirby delivers that brilliant fucking monologue about the best day of his life, you know, kicking his dad out of the house, saying, like, you know, we don't need you anymore. Don't, you know, fucking leave or whatever. And, you know, he's like, you know, nah, I took care of my mom and whatever. And, like, Daniel Stern's like, what was your worst day? And he goes, same day. You know, like that. Like, that's a gut punch.
Yeah.
In a very funny movie. There is none of that in this movie.
Yeah.
That's what this movie wants to be, I think. But somewhere along the line, and I feel like the script had to have been about that at the beginning.
Sure.
But somewhere along the line, it got stripped out from who knows how many fingers in the script.
Yeah.
But I think that's because there is a shadow of it wants to be about fathers and sons left in the movie, but it's only a shadow.
Like at the end when De Niro's character thinks that Billy Crystal's character betrayed him, which he kind of did.
Well, they manipulated him, but yeah.
And he takes him to the same restaurant that his father was killed in, where he's going to kill him.
Yeah,
like, that's really symbolic of, like he's kind of, like, stepping into the... Which is what good therapy should be, where he's kind of becoming the father so he can work through the issues. Mm-hmm. But we don't really see that... I mean, they haven't spent any time together for that to really be working anyway.
Well, and that's another thing, too. There's not enough time with them, like... It's all comedic situations. There's not they have like five conversations, and it's like therapy doesn't really work like that.
No, not that fast.
Now that I do think they have good chemistry together.
Yeah,
Billy Crystal and Robert De Niro. I think they work well together. But it has to be more of a straight man, funny man kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when De Niro the worst parts of the movie are when De Niro's trying to be funny. You know, like we talked about with the fake laughing. Mm. But if this movie was directed by Harold Ramis, who is a good director, was in Ghostbusters, Egon in Ghostbusters, you know him.
So we've got good directors, good actors. Was it the writing? Like, what's the problem in this movie?
Harold Ramis wrote it with two other guys. The one guy wrote on Home Improvement. You know, I believe he wrote the line,
Well, there we go. There's the problem.
No. But he wrote... you made up that line earlier in this episode, and you thought this.
No, I mean, you know what I mean when he... with the thing. Like, he does that. He grunts. He's like,
That's a Tim Allen thing. Yeah. He did that in the stand-up. This guy didn't write that.
Of course not. Okay.
So, wow. But you believed it 5 seconds ago.
I did.
Anyway, he wrote on Home Improvement. He wrote on a couple other shows, too, TV shows. This is his first movie script.
Okay.
And the other guy, it's also his first movie script.
So maybe they're used to having more time.
I guess, or I don't know. Harold Ramis wrote Caddyshack and Animal House and you know, helped write Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. He's written great comedies. Hmm. And he's directed some great comedies. But he directed National Lampoon's Vacation, okay, for Christ's sake. But I just, it doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't really work for me.
It doesn't. It just kind of falls flat.
It's sporadically funny.
Mm-hmm.
And some, like, not even sporadically interesting. Very, very occasionally interesting. And that's, I think, the biggest indictment, is that I just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really care that much about the things going on. I kind of care about Billy Crystal's character. I kind of care about Robert De Niro's character. And I guess I somewhat care about Lisa Kudrow and her character. But other than that, I don't really care that much.
I kind of feel like there was a pacing issue, too. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, everything at the movie came together into, like, that crazy action, you know, hated it.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I can see that. It's... I mean, it's a fairly standard structure, I think.
I just usually hate it whenever the movies burst out into action scenes.
It does kind of really ramp up at the end. Suddenly they're going to kill him. Suddenly they're almost going to get killed. Suddenly there's a big war. It does, like, it's almost like a Hot Shots type thing, too, mm-hmm. where they're like... They're all standing there, and they're like, I'm leaving, you know, we're done with this or whatever.
That's not as intelligent as they sound.
We're Italian. And then all of a sudden, there are just machine guns and shit out of nowhere. And it's like, it's a really weird escalation of violence. I do agree with that. I can't really recommend it.
No.
It's fine. I think if you wanted to wait to see it on video, that's fine.
Just make sure you make popcorn, otherwise it's not worth it.
Yeah. I feel like we've seen better movies this year.
Oh, for sure.
And I feel like we're going to see better movies this year.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I can't imagine this is the best. We should have seen 200 Cigarettes.
We really should have.
Maybe we'll watch that at some point.
I hope so. It looks really interesting. And isn't Christina Ricci in it?
Yeah, she is.
So, yeah.
Well, that is the episode. Carol, tell people where they can find Christina Ricci.
You can write us at latefee1994@aol.com. Mm-hmm. Check out our website at www.retrolatefee.com. Mm-hmm. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/retrolatefee.
Yes.
And then share the tapes with your friends.
All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.